Ask the Expert on the Anton Savage Show.
Brought to you by Standard Life, a life savings company for your journey to and through retirement.
Dr. Eleanor Galvin, who will answer we'll have a shot at answering We'll answer most medical queries that you might have. 531-106 if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106. It is COVID and flu jab season. Robert Kennedy tells us it's a bad idea. We should ignore them.
We should just ignore all Americans, not this weekend in Dublin, but I think he's possibly not well himself. Could do the few jabs or something. Anybody who's over 60 who's vulnerable could think about getting the COVID jab again. It has changed the type of vaccine we are getting to match what's out there at the moment. And what we're seeing is quite a bit of COVID, where there's quite a lot of diarrhea and sometimes a bit of vomiting, which is not pleasant.
COVID.
Yeah, kind of a gastric-y COVID. So the people seem to be quite unwell at the moment with it. So it's no harm. It's a free booster. If you haven't had one in the last 6 months, year.
But I get the sense that COVID as a general illness has mutated down to a much less threatening thing than it once was.
It's still not going away, and it's still pretty threatening for people who are older and vulnerable, or people who have underlying illnesses. And if you are caring for somebody, if you're a healthcare worker, if you have an illness yourself, if you like to go to work and not miss it, then there are all reasons where you could get yourself a COVID jab.
And the same for the flu?
Oh, absolutely the same for the flu. They're both kind of fluish sort of illnesses now. And it is really for the vulnerable we're trying to protect. But also, nobody likes to be sick.
Do you find yourself getting inundated with people coming in for the vaccines? Or is it still not ubiquitous?
It's not ubiquitous. It is good to see them coming. And I think people who know they're vulnerable do come in. I think we still have had a few people recently who've never had a vaccine before, but maybe have decided that they're changing their minds. There's also a nasal flu vaccine for children, which is actually a really good thing because they don't need to get a jab. There's a lot of kids have asthma and things like that, and flu isn't great for them.
Why can't they do that for adults? Why do adults still
have
to get
it?
They
can, but I think it costs more. I think it's cheaper
suffer through and take
suffer
the cheap route.
Yeah, but if you have an adult with mental handicap, you can give them the nasal. You can. So let me say that too loud. You can. It's perfectly legitimate. But if you have somebody who's a child, it's much easier to give them a little whiff up the nose. They don't mind at all. And it keeps them at school and it keeps them well. And certainly if they're asthmatic, I would definitely go for it.
How do you handle having to give the injections to little babies? I don't know. Of all of the things that doctors have to do, I think that no matter how well you do it, must be very difficult.
You know, I've jabbed so many babies in my day. And when I brought my first to be jabbed, I couldn't stop crying. And then gone back to work the next day to jab other people's babies is different when it's your own. It is different.
Is there a technique? Is it distraction? Is it immediate application of a lollipop? What's the ideal route?
As fast as you can do it. As fast as you can do it. They can look at you kind of sideways the next time they come in, though. It's not great for relationship building.
Text saying, can I do the celiac test at home? And is it true that it will not work if on a gluten-free diet?
I don't know why you would want to do your celiac test at home. I don't know where you would be getting it
from. I feel
we
need Sarah Keogh for this. I think Sarah Keogh would be irked at some part
there
of
is
this.
There is a blood test for celiac, which is more accurate than it ever was. There's two parts to it. It goes to a hospital and it gets in you, and the hospital lab will say they are celiac or they're not. And then after that, it still needs to be confirmed by a gastroenterologist. If you live a celiac, if you live a gluten-free life and properly gluten-free, then your celiac test should eventually come back negative. Even if you've been diagnosed celiac, you follow a gluten-free diet, it'll come back negative. But celiac is an important disorder that has a lot of consequences. It's no harm to test for it at all sorts of ages if you have symptoms, but it's also no harm to do it properly.
Presumably getting properly onto a gluten-free diet is challenging because there's gluten in more things than you'd imagine.
Yeah, there's people who have two toasters in their kitchen and they don't put their bread into the toaster where they don't. And that is what you're meant to do. It's a proper celiac disease. It has long-term implications if it's not managed properly.
Have you heard about these houses in America that have two dishwashers?
I think that sounds fabulous.
Oh, wouldn't it be amazing?
Yeah.
Isn't it just the best invention ever?
No, it's fabulous. I think it sounds like the dream come true.
And the logic of it, like it's the same space as a press, so you don't lose anything out of the kitchen.
No.
It's phenomenal. Anyway, I've been getting nausea every morning. I am 56, so not pregnant. What's the oldest pregnant person you've ever had in? Woman, I should say.
People are older and older getting pregnant now, and you can go abroad and you can get treatment. I'm naturally pregnant, probably 46, 47. Very unusual, though. Probably we only have had two in a lifetime. And they would be people who've had a lot of other children before, and therefore maybe it's that sort of thing that you don't ovulate when you're pregnant. So if you've just had four or five in a row, you can still be on the lookout in your mid-40s. But if you were starting your mid-40s, it would be different.
Well, this text says, I've been getting nausea every morning. I'm 56, so not pregnant. I have no underlying health conditions. Could it be vitamin deficiency?
I think that if you are nauseous at that age of your life, that you would deserve to go to a doctor, have bloods done, make sure you're not nauseous for any sort of sinister reasons. Not saying there is. This person could be stressed. There could be all sorts of other things going on. Maybe they drink a pint of Southern Comfort before they go to bed. Who knows? But they would definitely deserve bloods, may well need a scope and may well need a scan. Pancreatic cancer, all those sort of weird and wonderfuls. If you have a new serious symptom like that at that age, have they lost a bit of weight without trying? Those sort of things, that all needs to be teased out.
And what do you do in that kind of instance? Do you go to the GP with a concern about the one thing, or do you ask for, can I have a total health check, bloods, the whole shooting?
You probably come and talk first of all, and then we make a plan. And maybe tease out if there's other symptoms or if there's other things going on.
A text saying, what does thickening of the sinuses mean and how does one deal with it?
So you have mucous membranes inside in your sinuses, and that's where the stuff from your nose comes out of. And thickened is generally maybe as a result of an infection or in the inflammation of an allergy. So if you've thickened sinus linings, they're more likely to get blocked up and infected. There are sprays you can use to try and thin them down, or drops and things like that, that you would use for a while. If you had a kind of a definitive allergy thing going on, then you might be on something long term. But it could be the consequence of an infection or the consequence of an allergy.
Do you remember Sigmund Freud and his thing about noses?
No.
Sigmund Freud, early on in his career, believed that the inside lining of the nose was causative in mental health issues.
Okay.
And he had a surgeon friend who he got to perform repeated surgeries on one of his patients to remove large chunks of the inside of her nose because he thought it would have a psychological benefit.
Yeah, no, that was crazy. That was actually crazy. That's up there with lobotomy. Yeah. As I said, probably only inches from lobotomy, which they used to do through people's noses.
Oh, no, don't even start. No. But I don't understand how somebody who had that and the complete personal commitment to cocaine that he did ended up still being the sort of veritable and respectable source.
We call him a large personality.
Yeah. But we still take large chunks of what he says and say, oh, I'm sure he was right on that stuff.
Yeah, ish. Yeah.
I'm taking 2.5 milligrams of Ozempic. How long will it take me to lose weight?
Well, now, if you were on TikTok or social media, you'd think that people go on Ozempic and they suddenly are 6 stone lighter. It depends on how much you weigh and how fast you need to get down, and are you getting a knee replaced, or are you just wanting to lose 2-3 stone or 4-5 stone? If you were losing a pound a week, that's 52 pounds in a year. But if you were losing 2 pounds in a month, that's still nearly 2 stone in a year. So it's not a race to lose it. It's not a race to get up the doses, because there is an awful big difference in price. Not in Ozempic between the doses, but Mounjaro, which is its competitor, has a huge change. So if on 2.5, you're losing 2 pounds a month or 3 pounds a month, then you're doing pretty reasonably well. You still have to get enough nutrition into you to live. You still have to eat. So I think 2.5 Mounjaro would only be the starting dose. Of Ozempic's 250 micrograms. That would be just your starting dose. And typically people would be just on that for a month, and then they would go up to a kind of a more. But if you are losing on 250, well, then stay on 250.
Do they have to modify their diet, or do you simply go on the pill and go on about your day?
No, so it's an injection once a week. And then what I would say to people is, you still need to eat. You still need to get food into you. If you are so medicated that you're not getting food into you, well, that's not good for anyone.
Do you remember the way with gastric band surgery, you would have to limit certain things and you'd have to already be on a weight loss plan? You don't have to do any of that crack for...
Well, you do. So if you were to say, have a look at your dinner plate, please start at the side that has the protein on it, the chicken, the fish or the meat, or the lentils or the beans or whatever, and then have the vegetables next, and then make your way to the potatoes or the rice, and hopefully you won't make it there, so that hopefully you get the more nourishing bit into you first, and then you can have the other bit if you still need.
That's genius.
Eat your way around to start. Start with the more filling bits. People are doing very well on it, though,
really?
On all those drugs. They are doing very well. Kind of quite transformative. great to have something to give people, do you know?
With, I assume, immense knock-on effects, because so many of the illnesses that people end up having as chronic and debilitating and expensive are functions of being overweight or obese.
Going on it before, knee replacements and things like that. People older than you would expect. It's not a drug for the vain and the young and what kind of sometimes it gets a notion of. And nothing is a miracle. And yeah, I would say drink more water, do the things like that when you're on Ozempic to try and keep your feeling of satiety like there still. But there's only small tweaks you have to do. But the emotional eaters don't do as well on it. So sometimes people don't like it because they can't get that hit of feeling satisfied if they're an emotional eater. And for people like that, then it's to put them on a dose where they're not, have no hunger, where they still live a little bit and they're doing okay.
And what are you seeing in terms of, or are you seeing anything in terms of sort of off-label effects? Because there was large suggestions that it would have impacts on people's desire to smoke or to drink or to take risky behaviour. Are you seeing anything on those lines?
Huge. And again, there's something like a 68% decrease in heavy drinking on it, which is more successful really than kind of rehab or anything like that. And that was a big study done by a Dublin doctor who works in my clinic. Hello, Dr. Morris, our genius. It was published at the European Congress of Obesity. And it is now, obviously, it's a collection of data of people that have been seen.
And as with all these things,
it's the start and it's not licensed for that use. But absolutely.
That's
and like drink is full of sugar, do you know? So drinking less makes you lose weight, but also Ozempic seems to make people drink less.
Very interesting. Text came in to say, I had a baby at 45. No children before that. I was very lucky. I was given a 7% chance of having a baby.
7% at 45 is even fabulous. And well done to her. That's a fabulous story.
Well, congratulations. Let me see. What is the best treatment for otitis externa? My nose turns blue in the cold.
Otitis externa. Otitis is your ear.
Oh, and it's always externa.
Yeah. So otitis externa is kind of like that kind of crusty stuff in your outer ear. And sometimes it can come from dry skin in your ear. So if you put a little bit of Vaseline around the outside of your ear, it helps the skin. But their nose now is the different bit.
They just added the nose.
I'm taking just two different bits.
Okay.
So I'm saying put a bit of Vaseline in your ear or something Vaseline equivalent into your outer ear canal, just around the outside, so as to moisten the skin so it doesn't crack and get infected. That's generally the cause of otitis externa. Can be sort of thing of getting shampoo in your ears, can irritate the lining of your ears or your external canal, and that also can set you up for that sort of chronic otitis externa. And what happened to their nose?
Turns blue in the cold.
Balaclava, maybe not a good thing, but... which could be some sort of cure. I don't know why. They may be just a thing. But I don't think it's to do with the ears.
Text saying, I was led to believe that there's always this thing where if, you know this line of if your feet are cold, put on a jumper? Isn't the theory that as long as you keep your core warm enough, then you will get, vasodilation throughout the rest of the body and you will stay warmer crack?
But you could put on a jumper, you also find a pair of socks.
That's a fine point.
Yeah.
So jumper and a balaclava.
Jumper, a balaclava and a pair of socks. I think if your feet are warm, you feel happier.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I dream about electric socks.
I love electric blankets. I think they're...
Really? Yeah, I don't like an electric blanket. Are you an over electric blanket or an under electric blanket?
I would do both.
Oh, that's crazy talk.
Yeah,
that's a toaster pocket.
It's cold enough, it's a toaster pocket.
I started my Ozempic journey just over 5 months ago, taking 0.5 milligrams now and lost nearly 7 stone.
Yeah, it's amazing.
This is thanks to less eating, avoiding carbs and lots of walking. Was doing a few kilometres a day. It's up to 15 kilometres a day. Now, isn't that a remarkable example of the kind of broader impact of it? To go, like, if you're carrying an additional 7 stone, you're not walking 15K a day.
No. No, and I hope they're enjoying the 15K and they'll keep doing it. And I can imagine the impact for all of the rest of them. There is a lot of talk about the impact for your cardiovascular health and also dementia risk and all sorts of stuff by taking GLP-1 drugs. So again, all that pending research yet to come out, but there's an awful lot of talk about it.
But 7 stone is amazing.
Yeah.
53106, if you have any queries, that'll cost you 30 cents. Or if you want to send them in by WhatsApp, it's 087 1400 106. Question about HRT and about the confusion and risks around it. What is the latest medical guidance for women considering HRT, and is it now more accessible than it was before?
HRT is free from your pharmacy now, not without a prescription, obviously, but the actual physical drug is free. The picking of HRT is an individual conversation to do with whether what are your benefits and what kind of symptoms have you, what kind of medical history have you, what kind of family history have you. But certainly there's more benefits to HRT apart from having less sweats and sleeping better. There is cardiovascular and dementia kind of implications that are good, beneficial. So if you start HRT before 10 years from your last period, the benefits of HRT are thought to outweigh the risks.
So give me that again. If you start more than 10 years...
If you take menopause at 50, you should have started HRT by 60. After that, maybe then the risks outweigh the benefits. But before that, they certainly the benefits outweigh the risks. For your bones as well, to prevent osteoporosis, things like that. Now, not an indicator to take HRT just for your bones, but it's one of those sort of benefits that comes along with the others.
A quick one before, because Bobby has tiptoed in just before we find out what's on Down to Business. A question we get all the time, is Ozempic for life? I mean, I suppose that is the question. Do you wean people off this drug or what do you
do? And some people wean off fine and some people stay in microdose. And whichever way it is, 7 stone down somebody since the last few months, well, that's fair play.
Eleanor, as ever, thank you so much, Dr. Eleanor Galvin.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.